Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU provides each of our listeners with current information on a wide variety of topics related to health, athletic performance, fitness, and nutrition. On Track 1, Corey will provide his commentary adapted from the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program, current research data, and his clinical experience. On Track 2, he will be joined by Tracy Hawley on He Said, She Said, for her female focus on topics related to whole food, health, relationships, and raising healthy children. Track 3 features an interview with our special guest, who will share their expertise and experience in the healthcare, fitness, and sports nutrition field. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 5, Number 5. In the last edition, I began a three-part series on the topic of running. Running is a great way to condition the body. It improves aerobic capacity and has a natural antidepressant effect. A good run stimulates the metabolic rate for many hours afterwards and is a great way to release tension and anxiety. Running is a good way to clear your mind and eliminate body toxins, but you have to prepare for it. Running demands a structured nutrition program that provides energy and stamina, as well as the raw materials required to prevent erosion and damage. One of the most important keys to running success is hydration. Water and its effect on exercise performance is crucial to understand. During strenuous or prolonged physical activity, the water content of all body compartments decreases as a result of fluid loss through sweating and insensible water loss from the lungs, especially at high altitude. Insensible means you're unaware or lacking in sensation, so you don't realize how much water you're actually losing. Performance impairment in athletes, soldiers, and laborers has been observed at 1% dehydration, which is about 600 to 800 milliliters water loss. A 2% loss of body weight via water loss can greatly reduce exercise capacity, and greater than 7% can lead to complete body collapse. Cognitive function is also adversely affected by fluid and water loss. Except under resting conditions, thirst is not a reliable stimulus for fluid replacement. The body's thirst center is located in a region of the brain called the hypothalamus. When cells in the hypothalamus are stimulated by rising osmotic pressure of extracellular fluid, they produce the sensation of thirst. Voluntary fluid intake in response to thirst, as observed and measured in controlled exercise studies, replaces only up to about 56% of sweat loss. So drinking plenty of filtered water before, during, and after running must be a planned mechanical procedure, like the run itself. Electrolytes control fluid dynamics within the various water compartments of the body. They allow for a constant, well-regulated exchange of nutrients and waste products. Electrolytes affect nerve transmission, muscle action, and gland function. They also maintain the permeability of the plasma membrane in vascular tissue and regulate the acid and base qualities of body fluids and blood. Electrolytes are lost primarily through sweat and urine. Excessive water and electrolyte loss can impair heat tolerance, reduce exercise performance, and induce severe cramps, exhaustion, and stroke. Important electrolytes include potassium, magnesium, phosphate, sulfate, bicarbonate, sodium, chloride, and hydrogen. Consuming a 6-8% carbohydrate solution reinforced with electrolytes and vitamin C can extend exercise capacity, improve tolerance to exercise stress, and delay muscle fatigue. Serum insulin and blood glucose concentration is maintained for longer periods. Blood lactate is also lower compared to drinking a solution of water only. Make sure you are always well hydrated before a run. Now, what about the hazards of running? Does running have a downside? Isn't running bad for your knees? We've all heard of shin splints, side aches, muscle cramps, and diarrhea. And what about the risk of getting hit by a car or mugged in the park? Doesn't running increase the production of free radicals, or worse yet, reduce muscle mass, strength, and testosterone? There's no doubt that every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Every coin has two sides. Overtraining and excessive running can and does damage the body. There's no doubt. I've seen countless numbers of athletes experience joint injuries caused by running. So, does this mean that we should never run? Physical exercise, and especially competitive sport, when carried to its extreme or misapplied as it commonly is, does involve certain risks. Any athletic event, every sport, and all recreational activity carries a component of potential damage. The key from the perspective of functional and predictive medicine is to analyze and understand those risks. Most running-related damage is a function of several possible factors, including excessive use syndromes, due mainly to constant overreaching, inadequate rest, poor nutrition, dehydration, structural complications related to the hip, knee, and ankle joints, exclusion of warm-up, lack of stretching procedure, and ignoring the principle of periodization. Periodization is a training plan that changes workout intensity, exercise patterns, and frequency at regular time intervals. Workouts are planned weeks, months, and even a full year in advance. Running distances, for example, are modified to minimize risk of injury caused by running the same distance over and over again. Cross-training substitutes running with an alternative form of aerobics every so often, like swimming or cycling, for example. This minimizes risk of injury associated with chronic repetition and forces an improved neural adaptation response while maintaining an excellent aerobic response. The weekend warrior syndrome describes those who seldom train consistently and then randomly explode with intensity without adequate conditioning backup. This phenomenon greatly increases one's risk of injury and death, especially in the over 40 age category. Conditioned athletes adapt to the effects of running and training stress by generating more antioxidant enzymes within the cell matrix of vital organs and muscle, including superoxide dismutase, catalase, and glutathione peroxidase. These enzymes protect the cells against oxidative damage. When you're in shape and conditioned, you produce more of these enzymes. If you're not in shape and you go out and train hard, you don't have the enzyme backup, and whack, you drop dead, or you suffer with some kind of injury or strain or some kind of fatigue syndrome. Maybe that never goes away. Running with excess body fat definitely poses a problem. Anyone who is obese, meaning men with more than 25% body fat or women with more than 30%, should start with light resistance training, such as dumbbells and rubber cords, and then work up to running as they gradually get leaner and improve their aerobic capacity. Swimming, dancing, cycling, and inline skating pose less strain on the weight-bearing joints. It's simply a matter of gravity and mass and weight in the form of fat. You don't want to damage your body in the process of trying to improve it. We shouldn't run or perform any aerobic activity with the exclusive intent to lose weight anyway. Run to improve pulmonary function and to condition your heart and lungs. Run to improve your condition or speed as an athlete. Run away from your spouse or a guard dog, but don't run to lose body fat. You may lose weight as a consequence of increased oxidation and calorie expenditure by running, but optimum nutrition combined with ideal exercise, correct exercise, is the real key to achieving ideal body composition. Exercise and physical activity improves and maintains form and function. Nutrition gives you the fuel and energy to move your form and the building blocks to hold the machine together. Many individuals who run for the sole objective of losing weight, lose fat and muscle, get injured, then regain the fat and sometimes even more, and are seldom successful long term. Optimum nutrition, backed by the intelligent use of dietary supplements, is the key that unlocks the door to health freedom and long term exercise compliance. Many variables influence body mass. Our daily macronutrient profile is a big factor, meaning the quality and quantity of the protein, carbs, and fats we consume. Thyroid health is a huge issue, as well as digestive and metabolic enzyme patterns, body type, calorie intake, energy transfer, food intolerance, allergies, overall daily activity, resting metabolic rate, thermogenesis, even our attitude towards food is a factor. Now let's talk about the knees. Believe me, you'll miss them if they're gone. Knee injuries affect about 25% of all serious runners. Most of these injuries are due to what is known as runner's knee. Excessive pronation can exaggerate how the lower leg normally twists inward, causing the kneecap to painfully rub against the long bone of the thigh. Special inserts called orthotics, which look like an arch support, can sometimes resolve this problem. Made from a cast of your feet, orthotics have an acrylic post under the heel which restricts the foot from rolling inward excessively. By preventing the arch from going flat, painful injuries associated with flat feet can be resolved. Other structural abnormalities include high arch, unequal length of legs or bow legs, knock knees, and curvature of the spine. A good running shoe can limit excessive pronation. Make sure the shoe fits your foot, be it wide or narrow. Buy two pairs of shoes and alternate their use. The sole should be flexible, and the internal design should consist of a wedge designed for arch support and comfort. Take account of your body mass. Heavier individuals require extra cushioning and support for greater impact. Achilles tendonitis is most common among runners, especially runners over the age of 30. This painful condition is associated with weak, inflexible, or imbalanced muscles, improper training, wearing poor shoes, and running when overweight. In a study of 15 people who had severe, long-standing Achilles tendonitis, all were pain-free after 12 weeks of calf training using a standard calf machine. Here's where weight training can be highly beneficial. We are what we eat, absorb, utilize, and do not excrete. Each one of us is literally made and held together from the air, water, and food we consume daily. In 3 months, our entire blood supply is replaced completely. After 6 months, we have a new set of muscles, and in 1 year, 98% of what we were is gone. Out with the old and in with the new. Cells die and must be replaced. To build a disease-resistant body that can cope with the demands of high performance requires the very best that nutrition and whole food has to offer. The knee is a large, complex joint supported by ligaments, cartilage, muscle, and tendons. Many athletes take glucosamine sulfate to facilitate repair of connective tissue and collagen after the damage done. I use it daily to prevent the damage and pain. Several studies have shown that glucosamine sulfate reduces pain, swelling, and tenderness and actually mends cartilage associated with loss of function. The amino acid glutamine, L-glutamine, and glucose, or blood sugar, combine in the body to make glucosamine. It's made inside the body. But heavy training depletes glutamine, and this depletion can compromise glucosamine production. Also, as we age, our ability to convert glutamine and glucose into glucosamine also declines because of enzyme deficiency. The best way to ensure stable, elastic, and impact-resilient knees is to combine adequate glutamine, say 10 to 20 grams a day in 5-gram increments, possibly added to a protein shake before and after training, etc. Mix this with glucosamine, maybe 2 to 4 grams a day, depends on your mass and your lean body weight in particular. And also take a multi-mineral supplement. I like to take 5 grams of glutamine before and after a workout in my shake, and also take 2 grams of glucosamine sulfate mixed with some shark cartilage, some chondroitin sulfate, and of course I add MSM to my shake also in powder form. Obtaining a full spectrum of essential minerals is very important. Like amino acids and fatty acids, minerals enter into our composition. They reinforce the delicate fibers of every joint and solidify the structure of our eyes, fingers, and toes. Take a multi-mineral supplement and look for calcium, magnesium, selenium, zinc, copper, potassium, molybdenum, silicon, iodine, vanadium, manganese, and chromium. Don't leave home without it. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. In the next edition, I'll wrap up my discussion on running with a focus on supplements that can improve peak oxygen consumption lactate threshold, and recovery. Thanks for listening, and here's a quote from the folks at Nike. There are clubs you can't belong to, neighborhoods you can't live in, and schools you can't get into. But the roads are always open.